Tuesday, November 14th, 2006, upon further review, episode number 23. In the year 23, the famous Roman philosopher Pliny the Elder was born. He was probably most famous for his 37-volume work on natural history. This episode, longer than 37 minutes. You may not think it's Roman philosophy, but you just wait a couple of millennia and then hear what people say. Okay, and upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we want to welcome everyone back to episode number 23, the post-election edition.
Yay!
I know, yes, we're all pretty excited, and we'll explain why throughout the course of the show. Before we do that, we want to thank, as usual, everybody who's been kind enough to leave comments and send us emails and, you know, had things for us to review and all that stuff. We always appreciate that. And we have a few things that we want to try to get done tonight. I guess the way that I want to preface this is we were sort of talking before we came on air about whether we want to, what kind of a show we want to call this. I think it's probably fair to say we're going to call this the war show, and we'll explain that in a minute. But
do we ever title our shows? I don't think we've ever titled it, so I don't know why you find
it necessary
to title this. We should
put it in like quotes or
something,
like TV episodes, you know, like...
I just find it significant that you felt that you had to title this episode.
Well, just because... Well,
is it because of the topic?
I'll tell you why, because I'm a little nervous about the topic, and the reason is that although it says on our site that we review everything, including politicians, we have not ventured really directly into the political arena. I mean, I think people who have listened to us for a while can get a sense of what our general political bent is, but we haven't ventured right into the political arena to the extent that we're going to do tonight for a while. And I guess we just decided that it seemed like it was the right time to do it. This is the season, and you know, our opinion is that we may very well have pulled the country back from the brink with the results of the last election, and we wanted to sort of discuss a little bit about that. So going in, obviously these are just our opinions. If you disagree with us, we understand. We're not asking people to, you know, share the political opinions that we do, but we would like you, and this is one of the things that will come up when we talk about the last show, the Right or the Wrong podcast, as we'll talk about. We would like you to be able to think a little bit about what we're saying and to engage in dialogue and discussion about it, because we think it's important to be able to do that. And so I'm just sort of doing all this prep work because, you know, we're going to be...
This is what Greg's...
This is a controversial episode, I think.
This is what Greg's co-hosts of the MEP Report would say. What is it they say about you that you're always like, you know...
I'm building bridges, man. I'm building bridges.
Covering all your bases.
Covering all my bases, yeah.
Try to...
So we have three things we're going to review tonight of a political nature. And the first two are going to relate to wars. We're going to start with the war on drugs. And we are essentially going to review the war on drugs in America. This certainly has applications to other countries, but not as much because we're one of the few countries enlightened enough to engage in this practice. Then we're going to move on to discuss, not shockingly, the war in Iraq, which was a major part, of course, of the midterm election that just passed, and it's something that, you know, we wanted to register opinions about and hopefully get some discussion going about it. And then finally, in our podcast section, we are going to be reviewing Wrong of the Right, which is a podcast that is from the left side of the spectrum, and we're going to talk about some of the things that that show does as well.
Right. The stars just seem to be in alignment. The we get podcasts submitted to us and we review them in the order that we receive them.
Right.
And so it just happened to be that the Wrong of the Right podcast was in the same week right after elections. And so we thought, well
it all seems
now is as good a time as any.
Yeah. So let's start by talking about the war on drugs. And I'm going to let Clea get first dibs at this because as a social worker, she's encountered some of the effects of this as well. So,
well, you got your big long spiel, so I should make a note as well.
Yes.
That I am coming at this from a social worker perspective. And what that means is not so much that I'm caring about the little guy and those who are needy, but actually...
because she doesn't care about those people.
The survival of the fittest, man.
Everyone's like, oh my God, these are the people working with our... We're just kidding.
But most social workers believe of looking at the environment of the individual that you want to help. And when looking at the problem, quote unquote, as you like to call it, you need to decide how you view the problem and what you view the cause of the problem. And that how you view and define the cause of the problem is going to influence how you view and define the cure of the problem. So right away, whenever we see certain tactics that politicians take, we look at how are they defining the cause of the problem and how that's informing their cure of the problem. And so right away, when we see the war on drugs focus on war, we see the politicians in power that are rallying against this form, because we don't want to paint them all with one broad stroke. There are politicians that disagree with the war on drugs, right, but haven't been able to change that.
Right.
That those that that carry that banner of the war on drugs are obviously looking at the cause of the problem being drug use. The cause of the problem is an immoral act, is something that they need to fight, is an enemy, is something that they need to beat down and get rid of.
Right.
And not necessarily something that someone else might see as, let's say, the result of sin. Or someone might say it's a disease. Mm-hmm. Or someone might say it's a genetic predisposition.
Right.
Everyone's going to have a point of view, or maybe multiple points of view, as to what the cause of the problem is. Again, the problem being drug use. And that would therefore inform how they would think that the problem should be solved.
And I think it's no accident that politicians in our country, anyway, have used this war terminology increasingly over the last 25 to 30 years. So you have the war on drugs, the war on terror, the war on, you know, the war on poverty even was something that we used for a while. And
yes.
I think, I mean, just sort of as a general note, I think the use of the term war is a damaging one to begin with, because as Clea, you know, did you mention the definition before?
No, I didn't. I thought it would be funny to start with, because Greg is a professor. And so he's used to getting papers where they start, you know, how your old high school or college papers,
right,
freshman
exactly.
papers say, well, the
American Heritage
of
Dictionary defines war as a state of open, armed, often prolonged conflict carried on between nation, states, or parties. B, the period of such conflict. C, the techniques and procedures of war and military science.
But look to the second one.
The second one being, right, a condition of active antagonism or contention, like a war of words or price war. And then the next one is a concerted effort on or campaign to combat or put an end to something considered injurious. Like, now they use the term the war against acid rain. That's a new one on me. I wasn't aware that we had a full-out war against acid rain. If you see some acid rain out there,
God,
you punch that acid rain in the face, okay? But,
right. I mean, you make a good point that there's a focus on it. But of course, we've been fighting wars ever, you know, since
the beginning
of the Bible, right?
But
dawn of time or something like that. It's all about the fight between good and evil.
Right. But the point, right. And I think the point that I wanted to make about that was the reason that I think that's a problem is that we already in our society can at times have a tendency to look at things in a very black and white way.
Right.
There is nothing more polarizing, of course, than war. It goes back to the earliest days of being on the playground and, you know, flag football. You get the red flags, you get the blue flags, and everybody chooses up sides. But in almost all of these situations, John Kerry said something, for him, very poignant, since John Kerry has made a habit out of saying some dumb things too. But John Kerry said something very poignant during the last election, during a debate that he had with George Bush, and he said, the problems here are always more complex than the president believes. And I think that that really speaks volumes about the way that this current president and the way that people look at this terminology. We have a tendency to look at things in these black and white binaries, and war, of course, creates that environment. You must defeat the enemy.
Right. You're
and
either with us, you're against
you're
us.
You're with us or against us. You're either with the terrorists. If you harbor terrorists, you are a terrorist. And all this oversimplification thing, which I think Clea and I both believe is really damaging. And I think that's especially true in all the wars we're going to be discussing tonight. The idea of oversimplifying is something which, in a way, we need to be moving away from. So,
right. So we're going to be focusing more on that that second definition, because that is really, in a way, that the wars that we're going to be talking about are focused. It's a combat. It's a campaign,
right,
to end something that's considered aggressive, wrong, and
it's something
harmful.
To be defeated.
It's something to be defeated.
Beaten, yeah.
Okay. So that's what we're focusing on right now, and so
okay.
We're going to start with the war on drugs.
Start with the war on drugs, and
a few things to say. The war on drugs is that we're focusing that on the war on drugs in America. We know that it's a national stage, and so there aren't borders to this conflict, but we are going to be focusing mainly on United States policy. And then we will also probably err on the side of discussing policy within New York City, purely because that's where at least my realm of knowledge most strongly lies. Yeah. I don't know about you, Greg, but also because
I know all about the drug war in Minnesota. I'm a big Minnesota. I know all about
next
it.
Podcast, honey. Sorry, right, next sorry. Podcast. But also because the laws in New York City are just such brilliant examples of the draconian, rigid, damaging, cyclic, continuing the cycle of use and harm, and not really succeeding in outcome that they hope to achieve at all.
And maybe we should discuss briefly just what the basics of it are. Basically, what the drug war broadly, and certainly New York is an example of it, is indicative of basically what it is. And this really started in the early 70s. Richard Nixon, I think, was the first one to use the term war on drugs, but there were obviously a lot of other politicians picked it up. And in 1973, we're actually looking at a website called droptherock.org, droptherock.org.
And any of you that have a lot of knowledge in this field are either going to go right on or roll your eyes we're referring to the droptherock.com.
We're aware that
it's obviously a very liberal-minded website, but they have some good statistics on there, so right. That's why we're referring to it.
And the rock part refers to the Rockefeller. When Nelson Rockefeller was governor in 1973, he pushed through a series of laws in New York State which reflected the national trend that essentially made it a crime, and very significant crime, to possess or sell even a very small amount of drugs. You know, even and everything here works about how much drugs you have on you at a given time and all that sort of thing.
Right.
But the penalty was, it was a very much almost a zero tolerance policy. If you possessed anything, if you were trying to sell anything, it was worse. But if you were possessing anything, it was really bad. And it would cause, in some cases, immediate jail time. And it would become a felony. So it became the kind of thing where it was in an instantaneously adversarial relationship between you and the state.
Right. Based on the concept, obviously, of extreme negative conditioning. Presumably, the idea is that this thing is quite tempting, and the only way to stop you from engaging in the behavior is to make the punishment so awful that you would think twice.
Right.
And this is also a big issue in America, because we have a lot of areas where the number of people in prisons continues to skyrocket for numerous offenses.
Yeah, in fact, last year, I believe, we hit the highest level of incarceration in the United States in something like 40 years. And, you know, relative to the population, the percentage of people in the prison population had grown. Literally, one of the reasons we're focusing on this is literally something on the order of 60 to 70% of that is a direct result of the so-called war on drugs. And right. We're not just talking hard drugs. We're not talking about, you know, Colombian drug lords we're talking about who were caught with, you know, a couple of grams, you know, whatever the amount is of marijuana. So that's what we're referring to.
Yeah. And also quite a bit of effect. One of the 50 million conspiracy theories in America is just simply based upon the amount of money that people are making off of the prison system in America.
Yep.
Not only the government, but private enterprises in many states within the country.
Right.
They're private companies that have built and maintain prisons. And then the whole little economic infrastructure builds up around it of hotels and restaurants. And then people buy homes. And it gets to be quite a mess.
Yes. And so, you know, and the problem here that we're facing is there is, I think, a general fear that if you don't, you know, if you don't punish these people, if you don't do something to sort of, you know, cut it down, if you don't work on the demand portion of it, that you're essentially going to set up a situation where you'll end up with, say, Amsterdam, right? Where, and if people think about Amsterdam, they think about this city where drug use is out of control, where everybody starts out using a gateway drug and they call marijuana a gateway drug, and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody's hooked on heroin and it's terrible. And we want to be clear here that Clea's and my point in this is not drugs are something that we advocate or support. In fact, Clea and I generally are not, you know, as opposed to some of our more liberal, you know, we're pretty far left, but we have some friends who are really, really, really far left. And some of them, you know, would say, oh yeah, I should have drug use all the time. I mean, I don't personally advocate the use of drugs. I think that it is sort of, it's a cop-out to life, and there's a lot of other things going on. But the amount of social harm created by this ludicrous war on drugs, the amount of the increase in the prison population, the violation of civil rights that goes on a widespread basis as a result of all these things, the waste of time and money and resources that gets wasted on this is colossal. It says, and I'm just again quoting from the Drop the Rock site, it costs New York nearly $500 million per year to imprison drug offenders. And of the drug offenders that are in prisons in New York State, 80% of them are nonviolent. Half of them have never been convicted of any crime prior to possession of this drug.
Right.
So we're not talking about taking hardened drug dealers off the streets who are selling things to your kids and then running up crack houses. Mm. That's not what we're talking about. If this were even a so-called limited war, you know, like a war on cocaine or a war on heroin or something, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about a war on all drugs, even drugs which are considered to have medically beneficial purposes, like marijuana and things like that. And that blanket use of it is what's caused some of these problems.
It should be noted, too, that that figure does not include what are the secondary expenses of that war, being the cost to the taxpayer to pay for child care services to take care of the children that are left behind when the parent is imprisoned, public assistance, welfare that has to go to paying for the family that loses their primary provider, or to the offender once released, helping them get stabilized back into the community, because usually those people can end up in public assistance because they have difficulty finding jobs once they have a record. Those kinds of secondary expenses aren't included in that figure, and those can also be quite substantial.
Now, you might think to yourselves, okay, but so fine, it's expensive, but it's not just about expense, right? It's about stopping the use of drugs. And clearly, the pain that people have gone through when they've seen people who are dealing with addictions, and I had friends who dealt with this as well, is substantial. We're not minimizing that in any way. The problem is that not only is this expensive, it also doesn't work.
Right.
What they've shown over and over and over and over again, so many times that it's almost unthinkable to me that it doesn't come up more, is that treatment in these situations works far, far more and is much more effective in reducing crime, something like 10 to 15 times more effective, statistics demonstrate, than just having these mandatory minimum sentences, which makes sense, you would think, right? Because if somebody is thinking to themselves, I really want to use drugs, they either A, don't think they're going to be caught, so we have a lack of certainty of punishment, or B, need the drug because they're either dealing with addiction, in which case you don't want to put them in prison, you want to treat them,
well,
or because they don't think it's a big deal. And those people are not going to be people that you're going to make think is a big deal by increasing laws. And
no,
for
again,
example,
this is where you come back, you know, to what the cause of the problem is.
Okay.
If the cause of the problem is that these people are just bad people that make poor decisions, then this would most likely cure it, right?
Right.
But the reason it's a failure is because it's not addressing the actual symptoms and cause of the problem,
right,
which we all know, quite global and quite specific, just to do a broad stroke, because obviously we don't have much time. Poverty, lack of jobs in certain areas, undiagnosed mental health disorders, just to name a few, right, that can lead people to engaging either in drug use or drug selling.
Right.
And unless you actually address those causes and those symptoms, you're not going to solve the problem. And we can see that putting someone in jail is not going to help them get a job. It's not going to help them stabilize their mental health condition. It's not going to help them not be poor anymore.
And because of the felony laws in this country, it has permanently established them as an adversary to the state. It means they won't be able to vote in many localities. It
right.
means they'll have to put it on school applications.
Right. So again, not only does it not cure those, it actually exacerbates those, because now they really will have difficulty getting a job.
Yep.
Now, most likely, they will really be poor when they come back out.
Yeah.
And also, they will be even less likely to get the mental health treatment that they need, and even less likely to feel invested in this society, because they will feel like an outcast, because they will be an outcast.
Right. The theory is not, is drug use a scourge in society? It probably is. The theory is, how do you stop it? And as Clea has said, you don't stop it by putting people into jails which have nothing whatsoever to do in terms of treating people to get off those things. And keep in mind, by the way, the point here is not that if you put them in jails or prisons, that treatment is somehow a gentle alternative. Because I think a lot of people think the treatment is like letting them off easy. That's not the point. The treatment does not mean you release them into the streets again. Treatment means that you do exactly what it says. You actually bring them into treatment. And let me give you a good example of this from the past. In the past, it was believed that mental illness was best treated by quarantining people, throwing them into asylums, and locking them away from the public. Or if you did let the public see them, you almost made them into circus attractions where people would come in and laugh at the crazy people in the buildings. This was true up into the early 20th century, believe it or not. And what we realized was that you don't throw people in a prison and lock them away to make them feel better mentally. What you do is actually treat the problem. You treat it as a medical concern. And the result has been that there's been a far broader understanding and some beginning to grapple with, you know, mental illness and things that didn't happen before. I think something similar can apply in the case of drug use too.
I just want to wrap up by giving another more specific example to everything that we were saying and tying in back again what Greg was talking about of the black and white and how that black and white can not only make it so that they create these kinds of incorrect cures for the problem, but can also fight against possibly good cures. And that is because, again, they look at it as you're either with us or you're against us. You either are fighting the drug use or you're helping the drug use.
Right.
And one of the forms of treatment that's come up against that again and again and again is harm reduction. If you want to get information around harm reduction, you can go to www.harmreduction.org. That's the Harm Reduction Coalition. They have information on that site. And harm reduction, for those of you who have probably heard about, again, talking about Amsterdam as an example, you've heard about a syringe exchange, needle exchanges. Those are an example of harm reduction. The goal of harm reduction is multi-pronged. The overarching goal is for people to stop their drug use. But also, the goal of harm reduction is to get rid of the transmission of diseases, HIV, hepatitis, that kind of thing. Their goal is to decrease your drug use. But in the meantime, while you're working on decreasing your drug use, you don't contract HIV or some other disease which could possibly lead to your death. Not only to mention to continue the spread of these diseases, worsening the occurrence rate in the United States and elsewhere. And so in that way, the goal is to help keep you alive so that you can reach the point of being drug-free. You have numerous instances, obviously, on the other side, starting with Reagan, of ignoring the transmission problem and then saying we must fight it and not trying to actually look to the reasons of why it continues. Let's put them away. Let's ignore it. Let's just let them die.
Because I think they viewed it as a moral equation. You know, it was just
right.
Kind of like, well, they did something wrong, and so now
That's what I was going to get to.
Right?
You know? So again, you come to the example of how are they viewing the cause. He viewed it as an immoral person. That's the cause of the problem.
Yeah.
And since he saw it that way, he thought the natural cure for it would be to just let them die, you know, because it won't be, if the cause of it is that the person is bad, then it will only affect the people that are bad. And we don't need to worry about it because we're not bad. And my mom's not bad and my sister's not bad. So it won't happen to them.
Which, let me say, for someone who purported to be a devout Christian, coming from someone where Christ believed that you should spend the most time with people like the prostitutes and the people like the criminals and the ones who were the lowest of the low in our society, it's pretty interesting that all of a sudden that got forgotten in the interests of, I'm moral, so I guess I don't have to worry about what happens to others who aren't moral. I mean, that's just the point being. There's a difference, I think, between treatment that takes into account all the causes and treatment which seeks to judge and punish.
Right.
And we have a lot of judgment and punishment in society and not a lot of treatment and thinking outside the box. So,
and at least in America, that's just so hypocritical, is the people that judge and punish the most are those Christians.
Yeah. In many cases. Yeah. So what do you want to say for, I don't think a rating is going to be too difficult to do.
The war on drug, right. I mean, pretty much the war, the focus of it is to decrease or to eliminate the cause of the problem. And I think that it's pretty much not only not accomplished that goal after, 30, almost 35 years,
yep.
It's actually exacerbated the problem. So, yeah, I think it gets a zero.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this is a colossal waste of time and resources. It needs to be stopped. And I think, you know, we'd be interested in hearing people's feedback about that. But I think that it's pretty demonstrably true.
Okay.
Next thing that we want to talk about, and we won't take too long on this because I think a lot has already been said about it, but we want to spend a little bit of time on the war in Iraq, which was obviously a significant thing within this last election cycle. The Democrats were swept back into power, not in the House, and then also, miraculously, given how many seats were in play, managed to win back the Senate. And in almost all of these cases, you know, the Democrats did a good job in capitalizing on national disaffectation of the Republicans, but a lot of this was really an anti-Republican American vote, an anti-George Bush vote even, more than a pro-Democrat vote. And so one of the things that was sort of primary, you know, sort of foremost in the minds of people is the war in Iraq. We don't need to go through the details. Everybody out there knows what has happened at this point and where, you know, what we find ourselves in the midst of. But we do want to say, just for starters, that Klee and I do not look at this in a broad brush and believe that the people who are fighting in Iraq are wrong from our side. I mean, that our troops are somehow doing something wrong.
Especially since some of them are our family.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, Klee had a relative who was on the first ship that launched the first missile that began the whole business into Baghdad. So this is not an anti-military thing in this sense, an anti-troop thing. But it is a stance, I think, that we're taking against arrogance, against a belief that we know so much more about the rest of the world than everybody else, that we have the right to impose our will upon others. And the neoconservatives in Washington, those led by Rumsfeld, who has now stepped down, of course, as defense secretary, thank heavens, Paul Wolfowitz, those, you know, Dick Cheney, the neoconservatives who believe that we have not only the right but the responsibility to impose our vision of democracy, not democracy generally, remember, our particular view, our particular version of democracy upon others, has led to a colossal, colossal mess in Iraq at the moment.
But I actually take a slightly different take. I mean, obviously, I agree with Greg, but my feelings are more along the lines of just being extremely appalled at the influence and of capitalism and corporate America.
Halliburton, you mean?
Because that's pretty much what I see going on here.
Yeah.
I mean, they can put up the fog in our eyes that it's about imposing our concept of democracy, but we all know what was really going on and why it is that we're focusing so much on this particular area when there's terrorism, anti-democratic actions going on all over the world. So, I mean, that's the thing that I find most disconcerting. Again, and I think that, yes, this could be quite easy, because, again, what was the focus of this war? It was the war on terrorism. It was to find the weapons of mass destruction. Zero.
Well, yeah, exactly.
We're now, what, 4 years and counting? End or decrease terrorism and the threat of terrorism.
Which has actually increased
since
this
zero.
War.
Yep. And it was to bring democracy, or our form of democracy,
yep,
and peace to Iraq. Zero.
The opposite has happened. And, I mean, we were looking at a page here which is called nationalpriorities.org, nationalprioritiesorg. And they have here a running count of the war in Iraq, which keeps ticking up. It's like one of those national debt calculators, you know?
Yeah.
And the current cost of the war in Iraq, as of, we're recording this, 20 minutes to 10 on November 13th, 2006, Eastern Standard Time, is $342 billion, $124,400,000. There is a certain, I think. Oh, sorry.
415.
Oh no.
425.
There is a kind of obsceneness to the cost of this war when you consider how desperately, desperately, we in this country and other people in this country that are desperately in need of what the United States could provide in means of resources. And instead, we are wasting it on this war, a war which is a war of choice, not of necessity, and which was fought. Now, I think what Klee says is quite true about the economic sort of reasons behind it. I'm sure that was a part of it. But I firmly believe that a lot of this came down to ideology. It is an ideological arrogance, an ideological entitlement, and most importantly, a kind of almost blissful religious belief that God is on the side of our president, who is, I mean, you know, he made these comments leading up to the midterm elections where he said things like, I don't care if it's just myself, my wife, and Barney the dog. All I need to answer to is my creator. And that disturbingly, you know, this personal revelation stuff where, you know, you really invalidate, and again, you make more petty the religion that you claim to uphold when you do these things. Mm. The idea that Christianity could justify the kind of slaughter and you know, murder and execution and chaos that we see is just beyond any belief that I can imagine. But I do think that there's a significant ideological component to it. And what a waste. What a waste is my thought.
Oh.
And so I don't know that there's much else that can be said about it except to say that we are heartened by the fact that, you know, in the midterm elections, things may have started to shift. And it's very clear that the American people spoke almost universally, given how colossal the win was, to say it's got to stop. And one can only hope now that the Democrats will actually fulfill the mandate they've been given, and that is get out of Iraq and refocus our priorities on people and not ideology. my rating of this war very clearly is a 0 out of 10. I think it is a nightmarish mistake, and I'm very, very sorry that my country was involved in it.
But the mission was accomplished, Greg.
I know. Oh, God.
That's what he said.
If we were going to rate George Bush this episode, and I was like, you know, there's no reason to.
I wanted to rate George Bush because, like, okay, what could we use to rate? Okay, we can rate.
Worst president in the last 50 years. That's all I can say. Anyway, you got to rate
him. We elected him twice.
Don't say we, Kimo Sabe. That would be some other people, not us.
Yeah,
but
he's fellow Americans.
I know, but I think Americans have come around to it now, finally, thank heavens. So, what's your rating?
Yeah, zero. I already said 0, 0, 0.
Oh, okay. So you
triple
the zero.
I think that adds up to zero.
0 times 0.
We want to do the math on that.
Zero. Zero. That's a zero. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. 0 out of 10 for the war in Iraq. Finally, we want to. finally, we want to conclude by talking about the Wrong of the Right podcast, and you can find this at Wrong of the Right, WrongOfTheRight .Bravehost.com.
It amazes me that simply after Bush trotting out on stage to claim that he was the one to tell the British that they needed to haul in these people 2 weeks before they were ready to, that now all of a sudden his polling goes up on how people feel that he's handling the terrorism in the United States from what was in the low 30s to now 52%. Do all of you people have your head up your This is what I want to know. I'm frightened. I'm frightened to live here. I'm frightened to be here. And I'm frightened to think that there are enough people out there that are willing to go along with this man who is obviously mesmerized and hypnotized an entire United States of America into believing and thinking what he believes. It's amazing to me.
This was submitted to us for review, and what it basically is by somebody, a friend of hers. I don't remember. I don't want to give the name because I just don't know. But someone submitted this for review, and I wasn't, you know. So we listened to it because that's what we do. And basically, what it is,
because we do what you ask.
We're here to serve you.
Yeah, I mean, the person didn't explain at all their connections.
They just said, "Let me know what you think."
So, all right.
It came out. I can say though that it came out of an attorney general's office, which makes me a little bit nervous. What do you think? I'm going to be taking notes. So this is our thought process about it. Despite all that we've just said about the fact that, you know, we are obviously left of center, and we think we try to be thoughtful. We're not knee jerk left of center. Which
and
we're
despite
going to talk about
in the a second. Rant that we just kind of put you through,
but it's not a. But see, to me, it's not a rant. To me, that's a reasonable approach to the situation, and I think it's a reasoned liberalism, and I will always defend being a reasonable liberal. I think that's fair. But I think the problem here, what this podcast basically is somebody who whose name is Tina McShay, I think. Basically, it's about once a week, I guess you saw clear, right? Or once every couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Tina McLaren, I'm sorry.
There's been nine?
Nine episodes.
And they vary. There's been one where there's only a week delay. There's some where it's two. There's some where it's three.
And they vary in length, too, right?
And they all vary in length. You have some that are 7, 9 to 8 minutes, and then you have some that go up to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it completely varies.
And it basically is a show in which this person, since it's called Wrong of the Right, you can take a guess as to where she stands politically. She's very left of center, and she rants, essentially, in her shows about particular subjects that she has problems with, whether it's the treatment of people in Katrina during the Hurricane Katrina situation, or whether it's the war in Iraq, or whether it's, you know, the treatment of British terrorists in Great Britain, or things like that. And she more or less is just a monologue, as far as we can tell.
It's a monologue. I think quite a few of them, or the norm, is that she will write up an essay of her thoughts about what's going on with some statistics, some information that she's gleaned from different news sources, and expressing her opinion with little snide, sarcastic comments here or there, calling George Bush not our president, but our dictator. Mm-hmm. And definitely you get her frustration, you get her anger. And I think that we can all understand that. We've all been there. In 2004, when we elected Bush, I was there. I felt that way.
Yeah.
I felt like, who are these other 50%? Why are they in the same country? I need to move. Because obviously, I can't be here. I can't be an American if those people are also Americans. I've been there and I've felt that way.
But
I didn't do a podcast about it every week to whoever.
Right.
I expressed my frustration, but I didn't do that. And the reason I didn't do that is because I didn't think that that would necessarily meet whatever goal I needed to meet.
Right.
And what is her goal? Again, coming to what is the problem and what is the cure? The problem, obviously, is the politics and the lack of intelligent government and responsible voters. What is her cure? Her cure is to express her frustration and anger and lay out in simplified language all the things that people are doing wrong and not understanding and not paying attention to.
Yeah.
The issue is that that's not going to address the problem, because there's only going to be two people that are going to listen. One, her friends or family, who presumably would hear her otherwise.
Right.
Or people, I don't know, who would be the other people that would listen to it?
Well,
people just passing by.
Angry far left
or other
people who already agree with her.
Right.
See, part of the problem, and I think that this is really a good example of the kind of really heavily partisan politics we've encountered in this country over the last 10 years. I'm reminded of this, someone talking about walking into a bookstore and seeing the two tables, you know, Ann Coulter's book on one side and then George Soros's book on the other.
Right.
And they're like glowering at each other across the aisle, you know. Obviously, George Soros's books are on the left side of the aisle, and you know what I mean? Ann Coulter's is on the right. And the problem is that all that it seems to me has happened as a result of this is the preaching to the choir. You're preaching to one's own base.
Right.
And what I find frustrating about this podcast, and I find frustrating about this way of looking at it, is I fail to see really much difference between this and what Rush Limbaugh does on a daily basis.
Right.
Which is shouting loudly about positions that I generally agree with, but doing so as if you were shouting loudly on the other side in a way that I didn't agree with. This, you know, the language that she uses, which is things like get your heads out of your, you know what, get your,
sand.
You know, get your heads out of the sand or get your heads out of your, you know what.
They're pulling you by your nose hairs.
Or, you know, when wake up and do this and do that.
Right.
And, you know, and what it ultimately comes down to is none of this is going to convince anybody who's sitting on the fence and is not sure. And what Clea and I would say right from the very beginning is most people in the world are just trying to do the best they can. Most people do not wake up every morning and thinking, now I'm going to go screw over the poor, or I'm going to try to execute innocent people. Most people don't do that. Most people genuinely try to do the right thing, and the problem is that they get distracted, that they're busy with their own lives, that they can
or
be misguided or
that,
whatever.
Regardless of that, I think that she also needs to pay attention that 50% of us didn't vote for him.
Right.
And she seems to just think like this country
they're all
is
idiots.
Made up right,
yeah.
of 99.99, everyone but her.
Right.
And maybe her close. And I don't know if this is because I think she's in Tennessee. And I don't know if that's because she literally is surrounded by all
maybe,
these people.
Maybe, but I mean, it just seems to me that if you're in that situation, the sort of beating your head against the wall and taking the sledgehammer approach is not likely to bring things. You know, the you language, what's wrong with you? Why don't you wake up? Why don't you do
right.
this? Well, this is not going to make anybody who voted, in their view, for legitimate, relatively reasonable reasons, stand up and go, you know, you're right. Once you called me an idiot and a moron, I really understood where you were coming from. I
maybe
mean,
it's cathartic for her, you know?
It could be, but
maybe
that's...
Maybe she likes to get it out there and hope that maybe one of them
but as you
will
say
hear it and
her cure is not a cure. Her solution is a solution which makes the problem worse. It solidifies the positions that we're in. The people who went out and voted against the Iraq war and brought the Democrats back into power and really defied what the pundits believed was possible only a year ago, those people were not responding. They hadn't all of a sudden become intelligent, right? They hadn't lost their minds and then became intelligent. It's that their reasons had shifted. And although Clea and I in 2004 sat there going, what the hell is wrong with America? We didn't stay at that belief because it struck us that it had nothing to do with what was wrong with America. It had to do with reaching people where they stood. And you can't do that by screaming loudly about their lack of intelligence and about how they don't agree with you. That is not a way to convince them. And it's not even just that it's not effective. It's also not right. It's sort of fundamentally undercutting everyone else relative to you.
Right.
And I, as much as I am a left, as a person on the left, on the left of center, right. as much as I disagree with conservative positions, I don't yell at conservatives and think, yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what she said, but my God, I mean, this is not the way to do it, is to scream loudly at people because they don't uphold your positions. That is what ends up with a crossfire mentality, mm-hmm. not, you know, changing the society.
Yeah, no, I do agree with your example of it was kind of like a Rush Limbaugh and...
Of the left.
Except... I don't know how to say this nicely, but her understanding of things seemed just a little bit simplistic. And I don't know if that was because she was trying to keep it simple and straightforward for her audience, or if she really doesn't have time to explain all the intricacies, or if her understanding really is just surface.
Right, right.
Because she seemed a little surface the way that the things that she was bringing up, the example she was giving, and repeating her frustration over and over again.
Which, again, given the medium you're using, podcasting is an example of something where you really can take the time to explain and describe it in detail and go into depth in a way that you can't get on the commercial radio. I mean, that's the other upsetting thing. Here you have a chance not to worry about commercials or being cut off or having someone else yell at you. Here you have an opportunity to explain things in clear terms. And I do firmly believe, I've always believed, that if you can explain things and have time to explain things to people, people will generally, even if they don't agree with it, will come around gradually to the position, or at least will understand it and will not actively work against that position. But yelling at people who in good conscience voted believing that George Bush was the right person for them, I don't agree with them at all, but they believe that, telling them that they're morons with their heads in the sand, yeah. is not only oversimplistic but entirely ineffective.
Yeah, it's just going to make them angry or make them shut it off.
So, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not, I mean, my rating of this is going to be pretty low. I don't, yeah. To me, this is a 4. I feel that...
A 4?
Yeah.
That's pretty low? We just gave things 2 zeros. And
well,
you think
I don't want to put it down by the Iraq War. I mean, that's a little bit. It's
that's
better than
true.
The Iraq
now
War.
We've set our zero. We had one. Did we have another zero before, or did we only had like a 1?
I think we had a 0 somewhere, but I can't remember.
We've just defined our Nelson, which exactly. is the Iraq War.
I don't know. I think. I mean, because I think she's passionate. I think she's trying to produce something. I think, and I'm glad that she's engaged. I really, really disagree with the method of engagement.
I also really don't like her website. Just to be simplistic myself and the way that we usually are.
Yeah, the website's a little difficult to follow.
Really,
I think. Yeah.
Not very informative. If you want to listen to her podcast, you have to click on the Listen Now section, and then that will take you to another website of the
SwitchPod. She's hosted SwitchPod. And that's, yeah, so it's not particularly intuitive. But I mean, I guess basically what it comes down to is we appreciate the fact that she's passionate and we're glad and we often agree with her, but we do not agree that this is the way to get things done. And we think, if anything, this reflects sort of what's wrong in some ways with American politics, which is just everybody insult and scream at the other side. And that, to me, is not effective. So yeah, I can give it a 3. Well, what are you going
to
give it?
I wanted to give it a 3.
Yeah. And again, this is not a reaction to the positions or your right to have the positions. It's a reaction to how you're presenting them. And in our view, this is not a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. All right. So that is going to sum up our rather controversial show for today. And again, we hope that you guys will understand. Those of you who disagree with us, that's fine. And we're not trying to push our views on you. I wanted to make it clear about where we stood and sort of look at that, because we think it's important to have these discussions open.
No, we were just reviewing things, Greg, like we'd review anything else.
Oh, sure. There's nothing different from the way that we normally do things at all, certainly.
No, we're just reviewing the Iraq War.
Right.
And the war on drugs.
And the war on drugs, that's all.
We've
but otherwise,
done,
there's no difference at all.
And next time will be Hello Kitty. You know,
right.
I don't know. We don't know. Maybe we'll review Staplers.
I don't even know what to say about
that. And rubber bands next time.
That'll be next time. So come back for that exciting episode. We want to thank everybody. Please leave feedback. Let us know what you think. And we will see you guys next week. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See ya. The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, Don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!